Alright, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the J-Pod Bonecast presents 31 Days of American Horror Story. Today's episode is day 26, October 26, 2020. I'm calling it The Witches Are Back because guess what? We're entering apocalypse now, and everybody knows that the Covenants are coming back during apocalypse. So in today's episode, I'm going to cover episodes 1, The End, episode 2, The Morning After, episode 3, Forbidden Fruit, and episode 4. Could it be Satan? So can't wait to get into this. I'm obviously, as I always do with the new season, I'm going to go over, you know, the cast, everybody who returns, everything like that. So strap in and get ready. All right, so as I always do, I'm going to start off with a character list. This is straight from internetmoviedatabase.com. And I'll just tell you some actresses and actors' names that are in this particular episode itself. Maybe some of the whole season. But when we get to that character, usually I'll tell you this is portrayed by so-and-so, and if it's a huge actor, you know, I'll talk about it. So, we're gonna start off with, you know, Coco, who is actually played by Leslie Grossman. Leslie Grossman is gonna reprise her role from the, you know, she first started out last season, did a wonderful job as the neighbor. Now she plays a pivotal role in this season, let me tell you, and she plays an amazing, like, yuppie-type person, you know, very wealthy and everything like that. And once you hear the story, you'll figure out why. But, yeah, there's even a little secret to her as well, so that's cool. So then, we have, Mr. Gallant, who's played by Evan Peters. He is a hairstylist, you know, he's actually working on Coco's hair right now. We have Coco's assistant, who is played by Billy Lord. And Billy Lord, just like Coco, or just like Leslie Grossman, sorry, you know, she returns from last season into this season, and she also plays a huge pivotal role as well. She plays Mallory, pretty much Coco's assistant. So then we have I'll just go through what IMDb has now. So then we have Sarah Paulson, Miss Venable. She's Miss Venable right now. Obviously, I told you guys the Coven's coming back, so at one point she'll reprise her role as Cordelia Fox. We have Adina Porter joining us again this season. Very awesome performances throughout her all of her career in American Horror Story history so far. And this is actually the last season she's in. But if you guys didn't remember, she started out in Murder House, and then we had her in season 6, and then, you know, from Cult to now. So that's pretty cool. She's been a great addition to the American Horror Story history, American Horror Story franchise series as a whole. I love her. Then we have the famous Michael Langdon, who we're not even going to see until the end of today's episode, but he's played by Cody Fearn. Cody Fearn, I believe they picked him up after using him as David in the assassination of Versace. So that was a very cool addition. He is going to kill it this season and next season as well. It's crazy we only have one more season left. It's unfreaking real that we got through this all. And, you know, we're already on day 26. We're going to end off perfectly by the 31st. We have Emma Roberts coming back. You know, she's going to play Madison Montgomery at one point. And, you know, obviously the witches. John Henry is going to be played by Cheyenne Jackson. Again, we're not going to get to him for a little bit, but cool that Cheyenne Jackson does return. I believe this is his last episode with American Horror Story for right now. And he started all the way back at, you know, Hotel, if you think about it, and everything like that. He's been doing it for a little while. Then we have the amazing Miss Kathy Bates. Miss Kathy Bates, let me tell you, okay? Kathy Bates is going to play Miss Miriam Meade. And Kathy Bates' role in this is so dark. It is amazing. I love Kathy Bates so much. And this, you know, this is her last season, too. You know, they didn't use her in season 9, unfortunately. And they didn't use her in Cult. So it's cool that she came back, because I really missed her. I thought she would have made, like, a great addition to Cult if they ended up even just putting her in the Scum. In, like, the Scum, you know, group or something like that. I really did. I love Kathy Bates. She is such an honor. Like, it's really such an honor to get her in this series, because she plays every single part that she does so well. So it's amazing that she made herself useful this time, you know, in this season. Then we have Brock, Coco's husband. He's played by Billy Eichner. We only see a little of him in the beginning. We have Timothy Campbell, who's played by Kyle Allen. Very cool newcomer. He's, like, almost going to set the stage as, like, a little main character on the side. But then you're going to find out he's really not, so it's crazy. And, you know, he ends up falling in love with the girl that's also in the outpost with him, and that is Emily. She's played by Ash Santos. We have Andre is also in there. Andre is played by Jeffrey Bauer Chapman. We have we're gonna have Miss Evie, who is played by Joan Collins. Unreal addition as well to American Horror Story. A little older right there, but great performance always. And that's about it, I think, right now. I'm trying to think of anyone else. I'm trying to think of the man who is in the Halo series. Oh, man, he, like, I want to say he orchestrates pretty much, doesn't orchestrate it, but when we're going to be talking about this, but, you know, Timothy is going to get picked up, and they're going to say, like, oh, his DNA matches, so he's going to come. It's paid by the cooperative, all this crap. What's his name? Sean Blakemore, sorry. All right, Sean Blakemore. Yeah, he's like a, I guess, agent, you'd say. Let me see what IMDb has for... Yeah, cooperative agent, that's about it. Yeah, but he plays only a little role. We just see him pick him up and everything like that. So like I said, when I do get to the person, you know, I will talk about their characters and everything. So that's about it for, you know, season 8 right now. It's crazy, like I was saying, we're already on season 8 and season 9. So let's get right into the episode. We have episode 1 of season 8, The End. Now, as you guys know, a lot of this whole entire season was very talked up before. You know, everybody knew that the witches were coming back even before they even come back or had a chance to be mentioned on the episode. So lots of spoilers, and, you know, it kind of took away from some of the episodes because we're always, like, wondering, hey, when are the witches coming back? Because it's not for a little bit. But no, don't worry, I'll get to that. So anyways, we have the classic American Horror Story theme. We're going to go back to the classic song, Everything. Everything about this season is so classic. Let me tell you some of the things we see while the opening credits are rolling. So we see some candles. We see, like, snakes, devils, you know, kids in, like, what looks like a bomb shelter. We see mushroom clouds of smoke, scorpions, you know, bombs, I was saying, satanic pictures. There's a microscope over, like, a blown-up town. And then, you know, it's just going to end up with, like, candles melting and everything like that. But original creepy American Horror Story, like, sound and everything like that. Very cool. So we're going to start off present day right now, and we're in the hair salon. We have Coco, who's played by Leslie Grossman, I was telling you guys. And Mr. Gallant, you know, Evan Peters, the hairstylist, is working on her. And Mallory, who's played by Billy Lord, is, you know, Coco's assistant. So she comes in with, like, some green press juice that she gives to Coco, saying, like, she needs to eat. Coco ends up spinning, you know, saying, like, what is this turtle shit? You know, this is disgusting. And then they're going to get a crazy alert sound on their phone. So it sounds like, you know, one of those, like, some alerts if you were to get, like, a tsunami or something like that. So at first they think it's just, like, a hoax. Like, you know, this is what happened when they accidentally hit this in Honolulu or something like that a couple years ago. So they're all just like, oh, it's all right. And then, you know, Coco ends up getting a call from her father, who he says, like, you know, Hong Kong's been hit. He was in Hong Kong, and he tells her, like, listen, in 1 hour, LA is going to be a crater. Like, I have a car coming for you to get on a private jet. Unfortunately, me, your mother, and your brother aren't going to make it, but you can still make it, Coco. So she doesn't believe it at first, but then, you know, everybody starts going crazy, and he says, no, this is for real, and the phone cuts out. Then they put on the news, and you end up seeing that, yes, like, you know, Hong Kong has, in fact, been hit now. So Coco ends up going, you know, in the car, and she's with Mallory, and Mallory says she needs to leave, but she ends up saying, like, take one of my parents' tickets, you know, Mallory? Like, there's gonna be nothing for you here, and plus, once that bomb hits, you know, everybody's gonna die. So Coco calls her husband, whose name is Brock. He's played by Billy Eichner, and, you know, she's saying, he at first doesn't believe it as well, and then he ends up saying, all right, babe, like, listen, you know, give me a few and I'll be right over there. So he gets caught in traffic, and at one point she calls him, and, you know, she again says, like, how far are you? Like, hurry up, we need to go. And he's still 10 minutes away, so there's no way he's going to end up making this flight. We end up seeing Evie Gallant, who is Mr. Gallant's nana. She, I told I forget her. Yeah, her first name is Evie. That's right. All right. So, yeah, but Evan Peters is grandma. Yeah, yeah. All right. So, we see Mr. Gallant go and try and get his Nana, but she ends up saying, oh, it's probably fake news. I'm going to call Donald. So it's amazing. Like, I love Evie's role in this and everything like that. Like, she also is very uppity, you know. We're going to end up seeing her origin story, but she seems like she was, like, a movie star in her past life or something like that, or, you know, of royalty. Like, even as the servant's leaving, she's saying, like, hey, the champagne is burnt, you know. Or even on the plane ride, I should say, she was asking if there was going to be, like, a cocktail, a fruit cocktail that she was going to order from the stewardess. But we end up finding out that there actually is no one even on that plane, so it's crazy. All right, so, you know, we're going to get to the airport now, and Coco's going to call her husband one last time. He's stuck in traffic. There's no way he's going to make it. So, unfortunately, you know, she ends up relieving him of their monogamous duties and everything like that. They had a commitment, and she says, you know, you're free to see other people, hangs up on him. The person who, you know, drove the people to the airport and everything like that, they end up seeing that people are coming for the plane. So now he pulls out his gun, and he's shooting people. Looks like there's fighting. Everybody gets on board the plane. It takes off. So the plane is being automatically flown, I guess. Because, you know, they do end up opening up looking for the driver at one point, and there is no driver at all. But we do see the blast from L.A., and we just see this huge mushroom cloud, and they pan into the eyes of Coco, Leslie Grossman's character. So, wiki crazy. Like, we're starting off right at the very beginning with the end of the world. And I don't remember if I had mentioned that the returning actress from Freak Show, Amazon, the person who played Amazon Eve, Erica Irving, is also back in this. She is, like, a member of the cooperative. The cooperative is made up of a lot of people, so we're going to see, like, a lot of, like, servants or anything like that that I'm not even going to name because they might not even be credited, but, you know, they just have no talking roles or anything like that. Even though they are familiar faces, you know, some people just don't have talking roles, or if they do, they're very small and everything. And I know she has, like, a small couple little roles and things like that, but it's very cool to see what she ends up doing. So now we're going to go 40 minutes before the bomb actually hits. We're going to meet Timothy Campbell, who is freaking out. You know, he's waiting for 3 o'clock to see if he got into the college of his choice, which is UCLA. It's him and his brother and his mother. And they're all sitting there. 3 o'clock hits. He looks up at the email, and guess what? He got in. His dad ends up coming in. You know, Timothy's brother, Eric, I believe his name is. He's like, hey, Dad, like, guess what? Like, you know, Timothy got in. And he ends up saying, have you heard the news? Like, World War III is going on and everything like that. So then they put on the news to see a newscaster, you know, like, saying goodbye to his family. Like, Hong Kong has been hit, all this stuff that we've seen before when Billy Eichner was watching the same news report before his character got blasted. You know, and they just can't believe it. You know, they're all hugging each other, you know, because they know this is it. But now we're going to hear cars roll up and everything like that. And this is when these people, all dressed in black, the cooperative, you know, black suits, everything like that, shades, everything, you know, they look like FBI agents. They come in and they say, like, listen, your son, he has genetic DNA that can, you know, that can survive this bomb, but we need to take him. You know, he was picked and everything like that. And at first the father says, like, you know, no, you can't take him. And Timmy doesn't even want to go. You know, Timothy's like, no, I want to be with my family. But there's no exceptions. They just literally take him. And we end up seeing him go underground. You know, there's like an elevator and everything like that. They go above the ground. And he's like in a cage where he looks above him. And then he's going to meet Emily for the first time. And Emily says, you know, they didn't have to look hard for me because I was in jail. I was protesting and I got sent to jail. Or I was, like, spending the night in jail, and that's when they told me. 2 men grabbed me out of my bed and brought me here as well. Then we end up seeing, obviously, the blast must have gone off because the whole place starts shaking, alarms go off, and we know the blast has hit. Timothy starts crying knowing that now his family is gone. So they must let the dust settle and everything like that, the radiation from the blast, because then we see, like, a 2 weeks later, and they bring him to the fallout shelter and everything. We end up seeing, like, these fallout houses. We end up learning that there's 10 fallout houses. And pretty much they just hold a bunch of rich people that either have paid into this or, you know, people that are survived by them. So we end up seeing them in a car. They put on hazmat suits and then they walk outside the car. They're outside the gates of the outpost. They're going to be greeted by someone in all black. I think this is Erica Irvine's character, honestly. She's a really tall woman, so I believe this is her under the hazmat suit. It's hard to see the faces, honestly. Oh, no, actually, maybe it was Kathy Bates I'm thinking of that was in there. But again, Kathy Bates' character, we don't even, like, find out her name, Mrs. Mead, until a little bit into the episode. I don't even think they mention it in this episode, but we do know that that's Mrs. Mead. So anyways, yeah, she's going to bring them into the fallout shelter. But before that, we end up seeing these two people wearing gray, and they're being shot, like, you know, yeah, it's a crazy, I forget what position they call that, whatever it is, but it's point blank in front of them, and they're just kneeling and everything like that. And they get shot and killed. So this is obviously going to upset Timothy. He doesn't know exactly what to do, but they end up grabbing him and bringing him along. They end up going down. We see them come down in an elevator and then go straight, and they end up like a long hall. Then from the long hall, there's a decontamination center. So this is like, you know, the four people that are here right now, the two people in hazmat suits, and then Timothy and also Emily as well in a hazmat suit. So they're going to go under, like, this foam thing that's going to, like, shoot off them. Then an alarm goes down, and, like, they're fine. You know, they end up showing them take off the hazmat suits, and they're greeted by Miss Venomina, Wilhelmina Venable. Jesus. Say that fucking five times. Wilhelmina Venable. Oh, man, you can't even do it. Wilhelmina Venable. Yeah, try that out, please. All right, so anyways, you know, she ends up greeting them and saying, welcome to Outpost 3. You know, she's showing them this whole entire place is underground, and it looks pretty good for an underground place. You know, I believe Timothy asked her, what was this before? And she ends up saying that used to serve at an exclusive boys' school, which is very cool because we're actually going to see, like, the boys that used to actually study there and everything like that. And she says that the cooperative converted dozens of these. It was made up by great minds in the, you know, from mankind that, you know, offer a visionary of the future. She's saying that technology has pretty much destroyed the world. They're going to rebuild it. And, the people who wear the purples around here, they're known as elites. You know, they're the people that paid their way into here. Herself is not actually a purple, but, you know, Emily almost forces authority, saying, so you're purple as well. And she says, no, think of me as the face of the cooperative. So we do know that Timothy and Emily are purple. The gray people are the servants, the worker ants, I believe she refers to them. And she says, you know, there are some house rules. Let me just tell you, never leave the building. If you wander, you'll not be allowed back in. And the canker pus monsters behind the gates will get you. And no sex in any circumstances. If you thought this was a joke, then you know why those two gray people outside got shot and killed. So that's why we saw them get executed. They were fooling around and everything like that. And, yeah, they broke the rules, and obviously, you break the rules, that's execution. Same time every night for dinner, and they have, like, a cocktail hour, where, like, we're gonna end up seeing is the most boring thing ever. So, Timothy and Erin, I keep wanting to call it Erica. Timothy and Emily, they end up showering up and everything like that. They dress all in purple. And when Timothy comes out of the shower, he sees the word 666. He sees a number 666 on his mirror in fog. We have no clue what that is. And then he hears, like, a sound and says, like, watch. I forget what it is. It's like, watch out and beware. Evil is coming or something like that. So we end up seeing Emily, and, you know, Emily greets him. It looks like there's a little fancy in her eye, you know, the way she looks at Timothy. So I love that. There's maybe a little thing going on. And we're going to see cocktail hour now. Now we're going to meet some people, so buckle up for this. I was telling you about Adrina Porter, and she's going to play Dinah Stevens. We end up meeting Mallory, who is a gray. We end up finding out that she's a gray because Miss, I'm just going to call her Miss Evie for now on. Miss Evie and Mr. Gallant, they got to get the purple role, I guess. Because, you know, there was four tickets and everything like that. They took the other two. Mallory was just there. So, yeah, they're all purples. And then we're going to meet Andre and Stu, the gay couple. They are both purples as well. And I think that is it for everybody. Leslie Grossman as well. She said actually that the purples, the reasons why he was a purple, you know, meaning Mr. Gallant, is because he told me he would not do my hair if not. And Evie obviously just came as a package deal. So those are all the people that are around in the cocktail hour, and they're very excited to see them. You know, they end up seeing, like, fresh blood and everything like that, and they think that, you know, everything's going to be, you know, pretty well now. So they're going to go to dinner. We see dinner is a frigging cube. It looks like this disgusting little cube. Apparently it's like full of molecules or something like that. And Leslie Grossman's character, you know, she can't take it anymore. Coco, she says, yo, this is the worst. What is this crap? Like, we paid all this amount of money and now this. So, you know, Miss Venable is going to say, like, listen, 18 months, you know, there's only going to be less and less if the situation gets worse, if it doesn't improve. So, you know, then we're actually going to see that Kathy Bates, I'll call her Miss Mead, I guess. We haven't even heard her name. Miss Mead is going to say, like, she's going to have Erica. See, I don't even know Erica's name in this. I don't even think they say it. But anyways, Erica Irvine's character is going to come in and whisper in something into Miss Mead's ear and say, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we're going to find out that there was a spike of radiation when they all entered the dining room hall. So someone is dirty, and, you know, immediately everybody starts blaming the new people. They just came in, but, you know, Emily and Timothy end up saying, like, yeah, but we can't contaminate right before we came in or anything like that. So we're going to see that Mr. Gallant and Stu were actually the two dirty people. So they're going to get scrubbed now, like, down crazy. It looks like a brutal, like, process, you know? And then they're both on the ground now, and now they're going to be, you know, looking at the radiation again. They go through Mr. Gallant, and he's like, oh, thank God, you know, he's all set. They go to Stu, and it seems like it's going to be all set, but then you hear Spike, and he's like, no, please, I can't go through with this again. And she goes, don't worry, you won't have to. And then she shoots him in the face right next to Mr. Gallant, and Mr. Gallant is obviously going to scream. And then we're going to hear about how there was an alert this morning. A carrier pigeon brought in something to Outpost 3, and it ends up saying, like, you know, three more outposts have been overrun in, and in 2 weeks, the whole entire world is gone. We need to be vigilant. And it's crazy. Like, you know, everybody's like, in 2 weeks, it's all gone? You got to be kidding me. So we're going to see Miss Venable and Miss Mead in a room together. They're wearing purple. Looks like they're drinking. You know, it looks like they're doing something they shouldn't be, because Mrs. Mead even says, like, you know, what do you think the cooperative would say if they knew that we were making up rules and terrorizing the guests? You know, I was always a military type person. I always took orders, and the cooperative has, you know, paid my bills for many years. I'm always going to respect the chain of command. And Ms. Venable says, you know, it's only us two now. We can't be thinking about them and everything like that. She says, like, dispensing punishment is strangely satisfying, and honestly gives me a little tingle. So that's funny as hell. But, yeah, we end up seeing them just playing cards and everything like that. And we're going to go to the next meal, where they get a hot meal this time, some chicken in the stew. So, you know, we're kind of, like, wondering, where else did they get this meat? They even ask, like, where did they get this meat? And she says, it's for special occasions only. But as all these people are eating, you know, they start getting these bones in the chicken, and it looks like human bones. So they, you know, Andre, his, you know, that was his boyfriend, Stu. He gets a little bone and looks at it, and he's like, oh my God, the stew is stew. He starts, like, throwing up. Everybody just starts throwing up. The only person that isn't affected by this is Evie, who keeps eating and says, I don't care what it is, it's divine. It's, like, disgusting. So we're going to see after, you know, they're all in the common room, and Andre is crying. You know, he's going off pretty much. He's saying, like, you cannibal, I can't believe this. And we end up hearing the music change for the first time, and the song that starts to play is by Maureen McGovern, and it's, I think it's The Day After. No, The Morning After. I'm sorry, The Morning After. And literally, you know, Mr. Gallant ends up freaking out, saying, this is a sign, they're coming for us, don't worry, we just need to hang in there a little longer. But sure enough, lol, we're gonna get some 18 minutes later type deal, and it's insane. The same song has been playing, and, you know, we end up hearing Timothy as the narrator, and he says, you know, one thing was for certain, it was the morning after, always, the same morning after. Whatever happened to the outside right now was obviously finished off by the nuclear winter. It got colder and deadlier. But even in after of all this death, like, there was something beautiful that came out of it. And shows, like, Emily and Timothy, you know, they're hooking up at this point, but they could only suffice with one kiss for a week, you know, not to get caught or anything like that. And it's crazy. You know, obviously they're afraid of getting shot in the head. We know what the penalty for that is. So then we end up seeing, you know, Ms. Venable is gonna bring them food. And, you know, it's obviously it's a morning because it's breakfast, they say, and it's half a cube. And once she says, this is going to be our last breakfast, we have to go back down to half a cube one day. you know, to keep the supplies going. So all these people are like, how are we going to do this, you know? And just as everybody starts to lose their mind, especially Mr. Gallant at this point, you know, he throws his plate and says, like, what are you going to do? You can't kill us all. An alert goes off. It appears to be a man on horseback who, it's crazy. The scene in this, you know, it's carrying, like, a carriage to the horses, and then the man is riding, you know, the man is outside on the, like, riding as the horses are carrying. The horses both have gas masks, so it's very crazy. So anyways, we end up finding out that this is one of the lead cooperatives. His name is Michael Langdon, as he shows the ID. And we end up hearing that song, you know, that they played a lot in Murder House and everything like that, You Belong to Me, which is crazy. So we end up finding out, and we also watched Miss Mead, who kills Michael Langdon's horses after. So even though they have gas masks and everything, and they have, like, it looks like they have scars already, cancerous scars from the nuclear winter and everything like that. So Wilhelmina Venable, she ends up introducing herself, saying that she runs, you know, Outpost 3. He almost, like, laughs at her, but not really laughs at her. And she ends up saying, like, you know, you sound like you don't believe me or something like that. And he said, like, listen, like, three more outposts have been overrun, and the three that are left, like, won't last another facility. I have this other facility that you all can come to. It's the sanctuary, but I'm the one that picks, you know. I choose who gets to go. I can either pick one of you or none of you or all of you. And we end up finding out that, you know, he has, like, apparently a stock that could last decades. So he says he's been assigned to talk to people and see who those are worthy. And, you know, those aren't banned at my horses. So that is the end of episode one. Crazy episode, the end. So we literally just saw the end of the world happen. And next we're going to go to the morning after, which is coincidentally because we just heard that song. All right, so we got the episode two, the morning after. We go now to Outpost 3 again in the beginning, and we see Emily. She's undressing herself from the purple gown that she has, because she's a purple, and she ends up hearing a noise, so she goes over to the closet door, she opens it, and she finds snakes all over the place. She ends up screaming. You know, Timmy comes in to come help, and there's snakes everywhere. He jumps on the bed. It doesn't really look like a good scene. Miss Miriam Mead comes in, and, you know, she's like, what the hell is going on here? And then she ends up cutting off the heads of the snakes, saying, like, yeah, this will be great protein. We'll have something to eat now. So she ends up making snake soup with all these snakes and everything like that. They're all sitting around the dinner table about to enjoy the feast. You know, someone says they won't eat it. I think it was actually Coco who says she won't eat it. But, you know, we have Andre that says, but you'll eat something with two legs, you know, stew. I'm referencing stew, obviously. And she says, don't eat it. Like, go ahead if you want. But we end up seeing Evie, who says, of course I'm going to eat it. I'm starving and everything like that. It's going to be great protein and fiber. So then, you know, they end up asking her, you know, who was the other person that they came here last night? Why'd the alarm go off? And she says, don't worry. In due time, all will be, you know, all will be learned. And just as they're about to enjoy their snake soup, the snakes come alive on the table, which is insane. So we go to the common room now. We're at the head where the helm is Ms. Venable, and it looks like they're all waiting someone's arrival. Sure enough, Mr. Langdon comes in and almost puts Venable in her place. You know, she has to go to the side when she's really been the one that's, you know, trying to be the face of the whole cooperative and everything like that. So he ends up just looking at her, and she goes to the side. It seems like she's losing control, you know. So he ends saying, like, my name is Langdon, and I, you know, represent the cooperative. And he says, I'm actually choosing some of you guys to come to the sanctuary. I will be doing an interview. And sure enough, Mr. Gallant is the first person who right away says, can I be first to be interviewed? Because, you know, obviously he wants to get out of here and go to the sanctuary. So Langdon and Mr. Gallant, they actually do have their interview. And, you know, the first question that he actually asks is, tell me about your anger towards your grandmother. And sure enough, you know, he's like, why would you think that? And then he goes, no, I'll know if you're lying, tell me. And he goes, I hate her fucking guts, you know. She always wanted me to be the perfect gay, a eunuch. You know, she'd do these bullshit parties, these bachelor parties with all these men that didn't even want to really be there. They just wanted to be there because they thought if they got with him, then they would get the fortune that she didn't even have. She actually gave it all away to, like, some cat donation or something, he ends up saying. So we actually see one of these parties, and it's wicked funny. He ends up coming in with, like, a boombox playing Relax, Don't Do It. You know, that Zoolander song, and literally he has a gas mask on, and he's like, oh, Bisque, I love Bisque. And he puts the gas mask, a little hose, into it, and he starts slurping it out. And then he looks across the room to Evie, and Evie's like, you're pathetic. So Mr. Langdon is like, so you like leather, you know? Like, obviously, Rubberman reference, and he ends up saying, you know, we'll finish this conversation later. Then we're going to go now to Timothy and Emily, who, you know, they want to run away. They're talking about how all of this is, you know, maybe we can go out there and see what's out there instead. It's better than living in here, you know. They really want to kiss each other. They only get one kiss a week, and it's really killing them not to be together or openly be together. We're going to get the Rubberman costume returning from Murder House, actually make a scene in this, and he's in Outpost 3 now. You know, at the time, we're assuming that that is Michael Langdon, because he does enter the room of Mr. Gallant, Evie ends up hearing this wicked rough sex sound, and she even looks in, and she's startled, she gasps, you know, and of course, she ends up going and ratting him out to Miss Mead, saying, maybe if he were to, you know, be taken away from the Utopia, someone could take his place, obviously meaning her. And Timothy and Emily now, they're going to go actually search in Michael Langdon's room. They see his laptop. It's crazy because Rubberman is above them, actually, just sticking to the wall. We end up seeing towards the end. But in this laptop, they end up seeing emails, and they're like, how the hell is emails even getting sent out? Like, you know, he must have a satellite or something like that. We thought all communication was down. And then they end up reading his reports, and they say that Ms. Venable has been making her own type of rules and everything like that, even making a rule like, you can't sleep with another person, they must be celibate, or it's punishable by death. And this really pisses them off. They're like, this is all bullshit, you know? So now it looks like Langdon's going to have his interview with Miss Venable, and he says, like, I'm on to you, you've created your own rules in here. It seems like he's not, you know, he ends up saying, like, do you know what I saw out there? Well, I saw these, a mother with two children, one was a infant, and the other one was, she was carrying by hand. And they said he said that they were covered in tumors and everything like that. Their lungs were sore from the burns and the toxic air filling them. And actually, the child that was in her hands was already dead. And the one that was being held by her hand, she was begging him to murder them. And Ms. Venable even asked, well, did you murder them? And she says, no. He says, no, of course I didn't. Then he ends up saying, I'm going to be the one to pick who deserves a shot at temptation. So we have what Miss Venable has to say about all of her guests. Coco is her last choice, obviously. The hairdresser is pathetic and too about himself. The grandmother also is, baddie, thinks she's, way younger than she really is. And she says the talk show host, Diana Stevens, she doesn't really know about her too much. And, that's when Langdon says, at this rate, I guess we're the only two going to the sanctuary. So then he, like, walks a little bit towards her and almost gets physical. And he says, like, this is the part of the second part of the interview. It's a physical, let me see your shame. Take off your blouse. So she's like, what? Like, I'm not going to do that. And it's because she has scoliosis and a little bit of her back looks a little messed up and everything like that. Maybe they did surgery or something like that, but he says, like, I want to hear about it. Does it hurt? Does it give you great pain? Or, like, when he's touching it. And she ends up saying, no, it doesn't hurt, but yes, it gives her great pain. And that's when he ends up, he's talking to her and everything like that. And he says he's getting close. It looks like they're about to kiss or something like that. And she says, do I pass? And he comes very, very close and he goes, no. So we know that Ms. Venable is, in fact, not going to the sanctuary. So they actually get interrupted by Miss Mead, and Miss Mead says, like, I need to talk to Miss Venable right now. She ends up zipping up Miss Venable, you know, because she just had to take off her the top of her blouse just so we could see that, or unzip herself, actually, is what she was told to do. And she ends up believing, she ends up saying what Evie had told her about Mr. Gallant and everything like that. And she's like, you know what, like, everything's been different since he came here. You know what it is, I bet Mr. Gallant and Mr. Langdon know each other from the past, because why else would he be the first one to volunteer and everything like that? They're definitely plotting up to something. So Ms. Venable is now actually, she's also with Miss Mead, and they're questioning Gallant as he's held by two handcuffs up in the air, And, you know, they're whipping him on his back and everything like that. And he ends up saying that he's getting great pleasure out of this. He's actually yelling out the names of gay radicals from the 70s and 80s. So we end up hearing, like, Greg Louganis and things like that. Very crazy scene going on because he is getting whipped a lot. And then we're gonna end up seeing Michael Langdon end up coming in. And Michael Langdon, you know, he says, first he comes in, everything like that, and then he asks what's going on, and he says, well, you know, I had to keep our steamy night a secret the other night. And he's like, oh, like, you know what? And then he ends up saying, I wouldn't sleep with you if you were the last person on Earth, and you pretty much almost are. So we know right there, like, who exactly had sex with Evan Peters' character, if it wasn't Michael Langdon. You know, was it the spirit of a man? It's kind of weird how they portray this whole thing, you know? And Michael thinks that, you know, he is so pathetic, you know, that this is exactly why his grandmother is disgusted in him, is because she hates him and everything like that. Why else would she report him? And he can't believe it. He's like, so she reported me, you know? And he goes, yeah, she hates your guts. And, you know, go talk to her yourself. And then he unshackles them just by wave of his hand. And then we're going to actually end up seeing Mr. Gallant come back into the common room. And, of course, you know, he asks Evie, are you surprised to see me still breathing, Nana? And she ends up saying, like, yeah, it's my time to live, okay? You've lived 10 lifetimes, all right? You know, you've always done screw-ups. I always clean up after you. I deserve to live. You know, one lifetime of me is worth 50 of yours. I only wanted you to love me. It's just not in my nature, you know? That type of situation. All right, so then we're going to see Tim and Emily, who, you know, they know this whole entire rule is bullshit, and they end up making love for the first time. Then we're going to see Gallant, and he's crying, you know, and also we hear the radio change. And this is what I was talking about in the previous episode, is, you know, I thought, you know, this was a song by Fleetwood Mac that started playing, Gold Dust Woman. I thought this was going to be literally, you know, this is when the witch is coming or something like that. I figured that was a sign, you know, Fleetwood Mac and everything, but it was not. In fact, we're going to see the rubber man, and he leads Gallant into the bedroom, so we wonder if round two is going to happen, and it looks like they're about to go through, but he actually takes a pair of scissors that are on the, you know, the boudoir or whatever, and Mr. Gallant stabs him over and over again, rubber man, and, you know, then he sees the door open, and it's Michael Langdon, and he's assuming, what the hell, what did I just stab? He looks down, and sure enough, it's his mother. Then we end up seeing Miss Venable. She's giving a talking to, you know, Emily and Timmy, and literally she's saying, you know what has to happen now, take them away. We end up seeing Timothy get loose from when he's about to be killed, and he shoots another person, but he gets knocked out by I forget that girl's name, oh my god, I keep forgetting her name. I don't even know what her name is in the actual show either, is the terrible part. I've just been using her actress name. I know her last name is Irvin. I remember that. Erin Irving, sorry. She played Amazon Eve. I don't know what her name is in this. They never ask her at all. She only has a couple spot. But anyway, she ends up like clapping her hands over his ears, and she knocks Timmy out. So we can assume this is before he got a shot off on Miss Mead. So after that, you know, he gets knocked out. Miss Mead is walking away now, and we look at Miss Mead as she's holding the side of her stomach. Instead of blood, we end up seeing some white stuff, and it looks like there's some wires inside of her. So we find out she's, in fact, a cyborg. And that is the end of episode 2, The Morning After. And before I get to episode 3, Forbidden Fruit, this is actually the Halloween episode. So it's very cool. It's fun to note that we haven't had an Halloween episode since Hotel, I believe. You know, the whole entire season of Roanoke took place during October, so there wasn't a definitive Halloween episode. Maybe like something during the Blood Moon, but we never got a Halloween episode out of them, at least that they had showed us. And I know 1984, I don't believe, has a Halloween episode either. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm almost 100% sure. So it's very cool that they got back to their roots on this one. You know, they had to pretty much come out swinging with this. We know that there's connections to the Hotel Cortez, you know, Murder House. There's so much connections in this season. I'm gonna get to it all, so don't worry about it. But before I get to this episode, the reason why I want to talk to you guys was, if you go to our Twitter right now, please use the hashtag 31 days of AHS, right? And I want you to tell me what your favorite episode Halloween episode of American Horror Story. It is. Just use that hashtag. Let me know. It can be from Murder House. It can be Asylum, Coven, Freak Show. If you guys don't remember, Murder House was Halloween parts 1 and 2. We had Asylum. I forget exactly the title, but I know there was one in Asylum. We had, Tricks and Treats, actually, I think it was called. We had Fearful Pranks and Sue on Coven. Freak Show was the Edward Mordrake episode, part 1 and part 2. And then Hotel was obviously Devil's Night. And, you know, it didn't take place actually on Halloween, but we saw Halloween the next day, so it was cool. And, or at least we saw, like, some flashbacks of Halloween, I should say. So, yeah, Cult and Roanoke, you know, they didn't really have one, but we're coming back with Apocalypse on that. So, please do that. I'd appreciate it so much. So, let's get right into the episode right here. It is the Halloween episode. It's amazing. We have Langdon, who's going to interview Emily and Timothy now. You know, he just saved their lives, and, because they've just been caught screwing, you know. And he literally says, you know, it's because of me that I saved your life. And they want to know, like, why? Like, what is the whole reason for saving us, you know? What do you need with us? But then it ends up looking like he's just interviewing all the people, you know? So maybe they are going to be picked for the new sanctuary. Of course, Gallant, he ends up saying, don't worry about anything that happened with your Nana. She died peacefully in her sleep. So no one really knows that he cut her up and everything like that. So that's crazy. Mallory, he's going to ask, like, what are your darkest places? She says, I don't have dark places. And she says, he says to her, like, what are you talking about? Wouldn't you just love to kill, the person that you're being a slave to? Which obviously he's talking about, Coco, you know, the fact that she's waiting on his hand, her hand and foot on everything. And she ends up saying, like, she can be a lot, she's a spoiled brat and everything, but I would never kill her, you know? And then we end up seeing what Coco thinks of Mallory, and she says, I tried firing her, like, a million times. We see Diana Stevens, and this is the craziest one, because she ends up saying, like, you know, they have already previously met somehow, and he ends up saying, like, wonderful to see you again. Should I be concerned about you being around here? And she assures him, no, I'm not as powerful enough. You know that I can't stop you. And she just, you know, deals with it. It's crazy because we're like, damn, how do they know each other? What is she exactly? Andre's interview, we just see him quickly talking about how he hates his mother, and that's about it. You know, Mallory, we're going to go back to now. They end up having this crazy, I'll call it a duel, I guess. But Mallory, he says, I sense it, like, you know, just tell me, you know, your darkest place or whatever. And she says, like, no, leave me alone. And she's afraid, obviously. And just when it looks like he grabs her, like he's about to stop her, you know, fire shoots out of the fireplace, and we believe it was her, and he says, what are you? And sure enough, we end up seeing, like, this ghost-type look of him and his face and everything like that, and it's crazy because it's, like, his natural power, I guess, and it's facing off against her natural power, and they seem like they're at a standoff, so she ends up, like, running away very fast, and she doesn't even know what she is. Like, she ends up saying, what are you? And then he says, I don't know. And he goes, what are you? And she goes, I don't know as well. So, yeah, then we're going to see Langdon, and he's asking his father for help. So he's cutting himself. He's, you know, doing a satanic ritual pretty much. He's drawing the star, everything like that. And he says, like, I've destroyed them all, but one survived, and I found her. And please, I beg of you for your wisdom. Like, open my eyes, Father. We end up seeing the blood boiling on the ground, and then his eyes turn black. It is so cool. I love it. And he says, Ave Satanas. So that's cool. That was also something that was said in the last season, if you guys remember, in Cult. So we go to Miss Mead now, who kicks off everything with the whole Halloween. You know, we end up finding out what she did on Halloween 1962, 1968. That was her first date and everything like that. 1988 was actually her first kill. It was romantic. It was like a waltz, she described it. And, you know, she ends up telling Ms. Venable, besides that, all I can really remember is a little boy with beautiful blonde hair. I used to take care of him. I can feel that he's gone. I know something, you know, every time I look at his face, I just see a blur, and I know that something might have happened. I might have lost him. I don't even know if I have feelings or if I'm just programmed to have feelings. And obviously, this is Miss Mead talking to Venable about the fact that they both just found out that she's a cyborg. And she, you know, Miss Venable asks her, like, what do you remember about the cooperative? But there's nothing that she remembers. And then she says, like, do you know anything about Michael Langdon? And she says, Michael Langdon is not in my memories at all either. And Miss Mead ends up telling her, like, she was not picked for the sanctuary. She isn't going with him. And, I mean, not Miss Mead. I'm sorry. Miss Venable. And Miss Mead can't even believe this. She says, you know what we have to do then? We have to stop him. We have to kill him. And then we're actually going to see Brock now, who surprisingly, Brock was the husband of Coco. He surprisingly lasted a whole year from the nuclear winter that we heard about, everything. But it does look like he has gotten some radiation poison. Like, half of his hair is gone. It looks like his face is really, you know, has, like, scabs and things like that. It looks bad. You know, he ends up coming upon these two guys, and it looks like they're, like, hooking up a leg or something like that. They're cannibals. And he asks her, hey, have you heard about this shelter for rich people? I'm looking for my wife. I've been on a trail for about a year. I mean, his girlfriend. I've been on a trail for, like, a year. And, you know, it looks like they're about to ambush him because the guy's coming from behind him. And he ends up obviously sensing this, or, you know, he must have some type of skill for a year after being out there, you know, and probably being hunted a lot. So he ends up turning around and shooting all three of the men. But before he kills the last one, you know, he ends up asking, you know, where is it? Like, tell me which way. And he still doesn't know anything about it. So he kills him. And then we're going to see a carriage with horses. It looked like the same one that Michael Landon came in on. And it's going through the, like, foggy smoke of all the toxic. And he's actually going to follow it now. So we see an alarm going off. Obviously, it's something's breached the gates. And Brock is at the bottom of the carriage. It's the carriage. They go out there. They look at the carriage. They open it up. And they get this big box. They bring back the big box to Ms. Venable. And it's Ms. Mead, her, and Aaron Irving. And literally, you know, they open it up and it's a big box of apples. And she's saying, oh, it must be a gift from the cooperative. So they end up saying, like, why don't we have a Halloween soiree this weekend? You know, and we'll end up poisoning them with these. We'll end up injecting them with venom. And then we'll, you know, use it to our advantage and kill every one of them, even Michael Langdon. So Brock is actually going to enter it, enter the outpost three, but first he's gonna kill the lady that's portrayed by Aaron Irving. Again, if you guys are on Twitter, please let me know what the character's name is in this. I would love it to know. You know, we just know her as like a helper, I guess, if you say, in the cooperative. So yeah, then we're gonna see you know, Ms. Venable. She calls an emergency meeting and she tells everybody that we're gonna have a Halloween soiree. Attendance is mandatory. You can make your own costumes. Don't worry about it. All this stuff. We end up seeing Coco getting her hair done. And it's obviously done by Gallant. And then Mallory's on the side. She's like picking through her heels and everything like that. And, you know, she's being berated by Coco. Coco saying, like, what are you doing over there? And she's saying, I'm looking at things that I could make from a mask. And, you know, then Coco ends up saying, like, you know, I think this Halloween party is actually going to be a coming out party of if you like got into the sanctuary or not. And you know, Gallant ends up looking at her and goes, sweet, I think like you'd know if you're going to the place already. And he says, you know, Mallory ends up saying to Gallant, why did you have something weird with him, you know, like a interview? And then she ends up telling them like what happened with her, how she thought she, you know, controlled the fire and everything like that. And they even tell her like control the flame on a candle, but she can't at the time because she's not focusing her energy enough. And we end up finding out that, no, you know, Gallant was like, nah, it, nothing like that happened in mine. But, yeah, so they believe now that, you know, maybe they aren't going to get in. At least Coco does, because Coco is going to want to pursue him a little more, it seems like, and try and definitely get a spot in that sanctuary. So we go to the Halloween soiree. We see dancing and drinking. A man dressed in black is dancing with Coco. We can only assume that it's Michael Langdon. And he actually shows her the room where they, you know, proceed to, she's about to give him oral sex. And literally, then she ends up hearing him talk. And of course, it's Brock under the mask. Brock ends up stabbing her in the head. And then that's it for Brock. We don't see what happens to him after. It seems like he sneaks away. But, you know, after that, we're going to see everybody else bobbing for apples. You know, Mallory's bobbing for apples, every single one of these characters. And we do know now that they have injected the snake venom into all the apples. So once they eat them, then they're going to be poisoned. Ms. Venable says, why don't we all wait until everybody can eat? And that way, you know, we'll bear thanks to our fruits and everything like that. So Ms. Mead comes in and says, I think we need to stop this. I can't find Michael Langdon and Coco. And, you know, we can't have any witnesses. So sure enough, she says, no, we have to do it this way. We'll end up finding them after. So sure enough, she says, go ahead, eat. And this is the craziest scene, everybody. Like, It's just so, like, Evan Peters' character throws up so ridiculous in this. It's, like, too much hard to believe. They're all just getting sick. You know, Timothy literally spits out blood at Emily. And, dude, this is it for, like, these characters. Like, once they're dead, we're going to see some people come back. But, you know, it's crazy. This is what I was talking about when I thought Timothy and Emily were going to be main characters. We do end up seeing them again, and I guess I'd call them main characters, but just not as main as I thought. You know, I thought they were going to be alive for a lot more longer. And, yeah, so Ms. Venable and Miss Mead did it all. So now they're going to go inside of Langdon's room, and it looks like now Miss Mead is going to pull a gun on Langdon, and Ms. Venable is going to say, you know, sorry, you're not coming with us. After she literally gets into the sanctuary by showing these balls. And, you know, Ms. Mead actually points the gun at Ms. Venable. And we end up finding out that Ms. Mead is taking control, you know, taking orders from Michael Langdon. And she shoots Ms. Venable. And down goes Ms. Venable. Ms. Venable is going to die right now. So Ms. Venable is so confused right now. She's like, I felt like I needed to protect her. And, you know, I'm just a machine. Like, what happened? And she, you know, Michael ends up saying, you're not just a machine. Trust me, you're so much more. I constructed you as a prototype of someone from my childhood, someone near and dear to my heart. I loved, you know. And that's when she ends up remembering the beautiful boy with the blonde hair. And we realize, damn, dude, they gave us all the information from the very beginning. We just weren't paying attention too hard. And, yeah, she says, like, I had to protect you, and, no, he says, I had to protect you and the plan, but now it's time to remember, it's time to wake up, remember it all, and then we're gonna end up seeing, you know, this cheerful music start playing, and it looks like the gates are opening, and we end up seeing the Coven return. We're gonna see Myrtle Snow, Cordelia Fox, Madison Montgomery. If you didn't remember, Madison Montgomery is played by, Emma Roberts. We have Frances Conroy playing Myrtle Snow, and obviously Cordelia Fox is Sarah Paulson. Sarah Paulson having multiple characters this season, so very cool. She ends up telling, Cordelia ends up telling him, find our sisters, and we see three bodies laid out. Dinah Stevens, Mallory, and Coco. Turns out they're all witches. They end up coming back to life. Madison looks at Mallory and says, surprise, bitch, you thought you seen the last of me? What a great intro for Emma Roberts to return that way, you know? And that was episode 3. That was also the Halloween episode. Like I said, please go to our Twitter and use the hashtag 31 Days of AHS. Even if we're on Facebook or anything like that, do that as well. And tell us what your favorite Halloween episode of American Horror Story is. Or if you want to rank them from, I think there's maybe 5 of them or something like that, or 6, 1 to 6, go ahead and do that. I'd appreciate it. All right, moving on. Episode 4, Could It Be Satan? We have Miss Mead and Michael now, and they're talking. You know, she's going to end up remembering all this stuff because Michael has now said, you know, open your heart, remember these memories. And Miss Mead is remembering, you know, a time where she's serving him like French toast, I believe it is. And she says, all right, we got to, you know, give thanks to the Dark Lord. They end up doing a little blessing and everything like that. And, you know, she ends up joking, saying, you know, my first husband, it was so easy to poison him. He always loved my cooking. And she go, you know, Michael goes, did you really kill your first husband? She goes, no, I killed my first 3 husbands. You know, best to just cut the cord if, you know, something goes wrong and make sure the insurance plan is up to date. Michael just ends up replying, like, you're evil. And she goes, hell yeah, I'm a devil, mama. So, we find out that everyone's dead. But not anymore because of the identity spell that was placed on these girls. You know, we're going to find out exactly why they thought they were somewhere else, someone else, and somewhere else, of course. So we had Coco, like I said, we had Diana Stevens, and then we had Mallory. So Mallory and Coco have been put under the identity spell, and they can't remember anything like that. You know, Coco just says that she doesn't want to die again. That was really shit. Dinah Stevens, she ends up saying, like, you guys are on your own. Like, I have nothing to do with this. I made my own pact. And then we end up seeing, you know, Mallory, who, again, doesn't know exactly what's going on. But at the first glance, she has glasses on. She takes off her glasses because her eyes are all blurry. So, obviously, she can see. We obviously know now that they are all witches. But now we're going to see Michael walk in with Miss Mead. And he says, like, you know, none of you guys can stop me anyways. Diana Shore. I keep calling her Stevens. Oh my God. Is it Diana Stevens or Diana Shore? I forget. I think it's Diana Stevens, but it could be Diana Shore. Oh my God. Anyways, she ends up saying, I'm just going to sit back and watch. Like, I have nothing to do with this. You know, I already made my pact. And Michael says, like, how you guys even stop me? But Meryl Snow says, I always thought the world would end with fire and ice, not witches and warlocks. So after the intro, then we're going to find out exactly all about the warlocks. This was a school for warlocks, as we once knew. It was a little boys' school. And we're going to see Billy Porter now. He's going to play Mr. Chablis. We have Cheyenne Jackson's character, John Henry. We have John Browns. He plays Ariel. He played Mephisto in the assassination of Gianni Versace. He was actually, I forget the kid that killed him. He was his dad, though. That was a crazy scene also. But yeah, so he's the Grand Chancellor. And then we have Penny Packer, who's played by B.D. Wong. Awesome guy. He's been in the... He was Doctor Strange in the, Gotham series and everything like that. Very cool. So they are all teachers in the Warlock School, and we see that they are called to the Chancellor. You know, they didn't even know the Chancellor was showing up. They end up seeing John Henry, and they say, like, oh, wow, you know, you're here. Something fucked up must have happened. But then they end up seeing the Chancellor, and they're like, wow. So they end up watching this interrogation video, and it's Michael who's being interrogated. Apparently there was, you know, this guy that got stabbed 5 times, and they can't, you know, truly explain what happened. So Michael's there to explain what's going on, and he ends up taking the officer who's in the interrogation room, flinging him up in the air to the wall. We end up seeing all of his bones break. Then he gets flung back onto the wall. He's on his ground now, on his knees, and he just says, save me, and his head explodes. And literally all the men in the room are like, whoa. And somehow, Ariel thinks that this could be the man that lives up to the same power as the Supreme. You know, this could be the most powerful warlock. It's crazy. A lot of them, John Henry, he doesn't really like it. He says, you know, and they call him the Alpha instead of the Supreme. And he says, even if this is the not... he doesn't think it's the Alpha, but he says, even if this guy is on the level Alpha, this is some dark magic that he's doing here, you know. And Ariel just, he literally backs him and says, like, no, he just doesn't know how to use his powers and everything like that. He's just learning. So Mr. Chablis just mentions, like, listen, one thing's for sure, you need to get face-to-face with that boy and find out what's going on. So he ends up meeting with the boy. He says, I'm a warlock, you know, I'm really powerful, and I think you might be one as well. This kind of intrigues Michael, and Michael starts talking about, you know, what exactly happened to get him here. And we end up seeing Miss Mead, who asks for a goat's head from the deli man. And the deli man, you know, ends up giving her goat's meat. And she says, no, I want the actual head. Like, I'm, you know, using this for satanic purposes or whatever. And then he ends up yelling at her, like, listen, lady, I'm not going to give you one so you can do your fucked up shit. I can't. And she says, like, why are you discriminating my religion against my religious beliefs? And she's going to end up going to talk to the manager, she says. Then Michael comes up to the deli clerk and he says, you know, you really shouldn't have talked to her that way. And he goes, fuck you. That's all he says to him. And sure enough, you end up seeing 5 blades come out of the little thing that they're in and shoot right at him and stabs him and kills him. Michael says he didn't mean to hurt anybody, classic. And Ariel actually takes him out. And there's a guard right there that says, you know, what are you doing? I thought this, I thought you were just talking to this man. He says, no, I'm letting this man go and you're going to forget about it. And he assures Michael, don't worry about it. He'll be stuck over there. But Michael actually has his own plan. Michael kills the man behind Ariel's back. So Ariel doesn't even see this dark magic. As Michael's driving away with Ariel, we actually see Miss Mead in the rearview mirror and she's saying, like, hail Satan, you know. And we start to hear, like, the whole thing about the Output 3, you know, how it became, you know, it was burnt down by Molotov cocktails after people, attacked them because, you know, Cordelia's speech in 2014 outed out all the witches and warlocks. So they didn't really like that in their neighborhood. So they went underground. So they live underground. And this guy goes to the school for a month, right? And he exceeds all over everything. He ends up wanting to take this test. It's pretty much you can only take it after a year, and it's like to test your power of a warlock. And, you know, he could be potentially a level 4, which if you don't know obviously you don't know about the levels of warlocks, because no one knows. I mean, I don't even know, but you know, they end up just saying that all those people there, like the chancellor and the other teachers, are all level threes. And they think that Michael might be a level four. So sure enough, you know, we're going to end up seeing him do these three tests. And I don't know exactly the, you know, I looked them up and everything like that. And there's actually like a name for all these little tests, just like the Seven Wonders. But they're crazy hard to pronunciate. And I don't even want to try to butcher them. So I'm just going to tell you the general basis. So we have one where he literally looks into a mirror and he's supposed to tell him where they hid a particular book. Not only does he guess the book, but then he reaches inside of the mirror and he takes it out. You know, and they're speechless at this point. Unbelievable. They end up having, you know, almost like a transmutation. It's your ability to transport yourself. And then the final test is there's molecular water everywhere inside of the air. They want him to change the weather and turn it to ice. And he does so crazy that he actually, like, freezes all the people. Like, they're about to die, but, you know, die of frost. But, you know, Ariel stops him right there. And he can't believe all of the power that he's seen. He knows that, for a fact, this is someone who must be more stronger than a Supreme. So, speaking of Supreme, we go to Miss Robichaux's Academy. And the Supreme is going to walk down on Zoe, who is now teaching the women. And she sees these new women and everything like that. She's observing her powers, and Zoe tells her, listen, watch her, and it's Mallory. And among the girls, you know, there ends up being, like, Rose, and it's already colored white. They want to color it themselves, so she turns it blue, and then all these blue leaves, they fall off. And Cordelia's like, yeah, she's special, I'll give her that. And then after they fall off, they turn into blue butterflies, and they float around Cordelia, and then one drops in her hand, and it goes back to the white petal. So she knows that she has extraordinary power. And, you know, then we're going to get Myrtle Snow comes in now. She's, like, saying, I had to cancel lunch plans because we're wanted immediately at the Hawthorne School for exceptional men. And, you know, there's, like, an emergency council meeting going to happen. So Myrtle, Zoe, and Cordelia are all going to go. You know, they think that Michael is the strongest warlock, so they want him to put him through the seven tests, but they need Cordelia to administer them. And Cordelia is outraged by this. She's saying, you know, that men will never be as powerful as women because they hold testosterone, and that will hold back their magical powers. And literally, she just laughs it off. She's not going to give the test of the Seven Wonders. She said that her greatest loss was actually, her greatest loss was the loss of Queenie. And we find out that Queenie was in the Hotel Cortez. She was trapped there. We end up seeing Mr. March again, played by Evan Peters, obviously. And Cordelia tried to get her out, but it was one, she calls it the mouth hell. And literally, you know, she, no matter how many doors or how many windows they went out, she could never go out. And that was her greatest loss, she ends up saying. But she also says that she'll never put a boy through the Seven Wonders because she also lost her Misty Day to the Seven Wonders because she was not ready yet. And she doesn't believe Michael can do it. So the men are obviously pissed, saying, like, you're scared. You're scared of Alpha to test him and all that. They end up getting ready to go, and we end up seeing Michael now. You know, Michael's in his room, and he's drawing a picture of the Hotel Cortez. He ends up actually going to the Hotel Cortez, and the minute he's trying to get Queenie to come out, you know, Queenie doesn't want it. She says she doesn't even know this guy. And Mr. Patrick March looks at Queenie and says, no, Queenie, look, you should go with him. You know, he's going to get you out. So sure enough, he ends up taking the deck of cards from her, and he says, solitaire it is. And once again, Patrick March is all alone. So we're going to end up seeing Queenie get out, which is crazy. She's now out of the Hotel Cortez, saved by Michael. And Michael ends up saying, we have one more stop we're going to go to. And we actually go to Madison Montgomery's Hell, which is very satisfying to watch. We have customer service. She literally is taking returns. People are yelling at her and everything like that, saying, hey, you look familiar. But they think she's like Lindsay Lohan and things like that. Or she's part of the Parent Trap movies. It's wicked funny. So we end up seeing her get tased, and then she's told to go restock the towels. So she's restocking the towels. Then she ends up dropping a towel, and Michael's right above her, and she's like, you're not supposed to be here, you know? And he's very surprised that she can even tell that she is in her own hell. And, you know, Madison ends up explaining, you know, I think it's ironic that I know I'm in my own hell, and all that stuff. And, you know, Michael ends up saying that he's going to free her, and she doesn't believe it at first, but she's saying, Yeah, she's still, like, obviously the vulgar Madison Montgomery, because she ends up saying, like, she'll suck his dick and everything like that if they can get out. And then that's when we're going to see Queenie come by, and, you know, she's so happy to see Queenie, she can't believe it. And she's like, yeah, this guy got me out, and I was killed in this freaky hotel with these weird-ass white people. Wicked funny. And, you know, then they end up going. So we're going to go now to Cordelia, who's getting ready to pack up. We end up seeing her, like, almost sense something. And as her, Myrtle, Snow, and Zoe go out, they end up going out to see Michael, you know, all dressed in black, along with Madison Montgomery and Queenie now. And the minute Cordelia sees them, you know, she ends up fainting. So, yeah, now we got some of the coven back, which is awesome. And that was the end of episode 4, Could It Be Satan? And this is also the end of episode 26. So I'll return tomorrow with episode 27. We'll get a little further in Apocalypse, and then we will end up finishing it off on Wednesday, I believe. And then, yeah, we only have 3 more days after that, so I'll get right through 1984, and that's it for American Horror Story. Unbelievable. Thank you so much for taking this journey with me and everything like that. I mean, I know we still have some more episodes, so I don't want to, you know, cut the cord too short or anything like that, but no, I appreciate everything and all the lessons. You know, even just getting 10 plays on something is amazing to me, because that means, like, you know, 10 people actually gave it a shot and listened, so I'm always appreciative of that, and like I said, I appreciate it so much. Thank you, guys. So, like I said, this is J-Pod Bonecast again, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.